took my mother's oldest grandchild from her, and for that I can never forgive you. I hope you can deal with what you've done. Jeffrey, I hate you!
What's your name, Seth?
This defendant will never again see freedom.
Crimatorium translates to a place where crime resides. Your host, Madeline, guides the listener through sensitive topics such as murder, domestic abuse, child neglect, missing persons, and more. Take the next step and subscribe to Crimatorium via your favorite podcast platform. Crimatorium is also available on YouTube. Join me in the place where crime resides.
Almost always after I was either physically or in some other way harassed by bullies.
Hello and welcome back to Reverie True Crime. I'm your host, Paige. As you heard in the previous episode, it was difficult and emotional for Ben to speak out about being in an abusive relationship. This is the conclusion of Ben's story, which he bravely wanted to continue to tell. The first episode truly touched a lot of people and inspired many. I can't express how proud I am of Ben for standing in his truth, putting himself out there, being vulnerable, and his desire to make a difference, which I know he already has. Ben has received a lot of kind messages and tweets on Twitter, and if you'd like to send him some love, his Twitter at is Shady Benjamin. I will also have his Twitter linked in the show notes. I'd love for everyone to send him some kind and encouraging words. Again, as a warning, this episode contains descriptions of physical violence, self-harm, psychological abuse, emotional abuse, and more. Without further ado, let's listen to the rest of Ben's story. When did you find out that she was cheating?
I want to say August 2014 that she admitted to it. But even back then, I think I could tell that she at the very least was keeping something from me, if memory serves. Like, I feel like I knew that she was, partially because it had been a while since she accused me of cheating or spending too much time talking to girls or whatever at work or, you know, my friends. But it had picked up again in 2013. And if there's one thing I know now, at the very least, people tend to accuse you of things that they're doing.
100% they do.
Mm-hmm.
How did you take that, and what happened when you officially found out?
I remember asking her if it had just been one time or not. And it took another year and a half before she was completely honest about everything, because it was at least 5 or 6 times for sure. I suspect more than 10, but I never got her to admit it. Obviously, I stayed with her because I did genuinely care about her. And a part of me felt that if I had been, for whatever reason, I thought to myself, like, if I had been a better boyfriend, she wouldn't have cheated on me, which is probably what she wanted me to think. So many things that she did wrong, I excused or dismissed, or I blamed myself for, which, you know, it isn't right to me, but also it isn't right to her to, like, try and remove her agency, I suppose. You know, she's a grown person who is living her life, making, you know, the mistakes that she's making. As much as I hate when I make mistakes and would rather they be corrected, other people might not think the way that I do. And she very clearly was the opposite. Like, any mistakes she made either were to be ignored, or I had to be convinced that they weren't mistakes, I guess. Where, yeah, she could do no wrong, no matter how badly she treated me or was to anybody. But me, I could do no right in her mind, I suppose, is what was going on. So I stayed with her when she admitted to cheating. And I remember her getting angry every time I asked why she would do that. And a problem that I have, like, I guess a personality trait that I have is that I like having answers. I like knowing things. And other people, you know, if it's something they're ashamed of or they don't want to talk about, I will pry a little too much. And certainly that happened in this case where she thought if she admitted to it, we could just sweep it under the rug and ignore it. But it really did eat away at me, just the idea that she would do that after everything she put me through, after everything that I put up with, everything I did for her. Before she told me that she had cheated, I remember what really got me thinking was that during one fight that we had, she told me that she wished she would get raped so that way at least she would be with a real man for once. And I was, again, like being out in public when she hit me, I was completely caught off guard. I had no idea how to respond in that situation because it's not something you expect to hear. And I remember I never really rose my voice at her, and I certainly never hit her. But I remember yelling at her, like, how could you say such a thing that so many women have to face that kind of thing? And if they're lucky, they're believed. Why would you say something so horrible? And she never really answered that. It became one of those things where I was blowing it out of proportion. I was making it a bigger deal than it really was. And she just didn't want to own up to it.
Instead of taking accountability for what she just said, she would rather say, well, you're blowing it out of proportion.
But that's when it really got into my head that she was doing something behind my back. I didn't know for sure she was cheating, but I was like 85% certain, and it turns out she had been. And I think kind of to pick up where we left off about, you know, her calling me not a real man because of the abuse that I suffered when I was a child up until I was in middle school. I don't know why, but she felt the need to emasculate me in such a way that was so personal. And I don't understand, I get that, you know, out there, there are those, like in my culture, we say machismo. I guess here in the States, it's like those dude bros, like the frat boy mentality, who are like, oh, this chick is emasculating me, or like my maleness is threatened by how intelligent or how strong she is compared to me or whatever.
Right.
But no, in this case, she was very much against me having my own sense of masculinity. To this day, I still don't understand why.
Kind of like a control thing. Like,
that's true. That's a good way to that would do it.
Like to strip you of what people would kind of normalize as a man, so-called being a man. It's like she wanted to strip you of that, and for her to have just all of this control and control of over who you are.
Okay, no, that makes sense. Now that I'm glad I'm talking about this, because this is never something I would have thought of on my own. I don't think I certainly haven't in the last 10 years. Well, I guess it's more than that because, you know, we broke up so long ago. But now that you put it that way, in that context, it makes a lot of sense, because I took on a lot of roles that are traditionally seen as more feminine. Like I was a better cook. I was better. Well, I guess not better with kids, but I was better with her niece and nephews.
Yeah.
And this was another thing that caused us a fight, is that she didn't like that her sister would ask me to watch her daughter, or her other sister for me to watch her nephews. I thought that was weird because she knew that I'm great with kids. Like to them, I'm just a giant teddy bear. I used to be in this program called Ready, Set, Teach, and they would send us out to, like, I wanted to be a teacher when I grew up. And so we would actually go to schools and learn with teachers during a school day. The kids were really fun. They were really cute. We had a blast, although I'm sure I caught them on good days, or maybe because I was something new and exciting. That's all it was. So they weren't as bad as they might have been. But in her mind, the only reason that I would be watching her niece or nephews is that her sisters must have been giving me something in return. And I'm sure she was thinking, you know, like sexual favors or whatever. That was another thing that like tipped me off, is that she did not like me being quote unquote close with her family, especially her oldest sister, who for a long time, even after my ex and I broke up, we were still friends.
You know, I think she, and this is just, you know, again, from the things that I've read, and, you know, I can't speak for her or her mentality or anything, but I know a lot of abusers don't like when their families like their partner. Like, you were good with her sister's kids. That's a threat to her. Like, they don't like you and their family to be close, because then you might say something to her sister like, hey, has she ever acted, you know, this way to you? Or maybe that you would kind of reveal too much about what she's done to you, to them. And it's kind of a threat in a way.
Right.
And maybe I'm totally wrong, but I, you know, isolation from family is a big thing.
She definitely did that with my family. Like, I'm still not, partially just, I'm too lazy to do it, but she had me unfriend, like, my entire family on Facebook a long time ago. That was more my choice than her choice, because what she wanted me to do was to block my mom on Facebook. She didn't want me, which was weird since I was living at home with my mom. So, like, blocking her on Facebook wouldn't have accomplished anything. She threatened to, like, kill herself, or she threatened to break up with me to get me to do it. And I told her I didn't want to do that. That's ridiculous. That's a terrible thing for you to demand of me. But eventually I ended up doing it. I tried to like weasel my way out of it by just unfriending my entire family and making it look like I had just deactivated my account.
Right.
But she found out. When push came to shove, I got shoved over. Like, she got her way in the end, no matter how much I tried to get my way out. I think in regards to my relationship with my ex, the biggest source of shame that I never really admitted to myself or to anybody is just how much I let my ex get between me and my mom. I remember the last time we were officially together and she broke up with me was in 2016. And I remember this day specifically because my mom and I were watching a Harry Potter movie marathon together, because we're big geeks.
I love it.
Thank you. I'll let my mom know. She'll get a kick out of it. And
yeah, I love that. Yeah, me and my mom are the same way.
Okay, good. I love that.
We watch Golden Girls together, and we...
Oh, that's great.
Yes. Oh, my gosh.
So I'm going from the scene where Dumbledore has died. So my mom and I are, like, tearing up. When I get a text from my sibling, formerly known as my sister, is how they like to be introduced now, because we're silly like that.
Yeah.
Or they sent me a text saying, did you and, we'll call her Stephanie, that's not her name, so it's fine, break up, because she's posting a lot of stuff about you. She sends me a screenshot of a bunch of stuff, and she's posted on her Facebook, where for some reason my family is still friends with her on her page, but they couldn't be friends with me on my page. All of our friends from high school, at the very least, were friends with both of us at the time. She's posting just this series of things saying, like, I was abusing her, I was punching her, I was raping her, you know, like, she was throwing everything out there.
Wow.
I've been cheating on her since day one. I've been doing this, I've been doing that. He's with his new girlfriend right now, and I'm calling it quits, and I want everyone to know, or like, whatever. And I'm like, why would she do this? And I tell her, like, no, as far as I know, we weren't broken up. I was just watching a movie marathon with our mom, and I left my phone to charge in the other room. And she took that, like, so me not talking to her for a couple of hours is what caused her to do all that. I cannot prove that our friends from high school and around that time, don't talk to me anymore because of that. But that is around the time that everyone stopped talking to me. So I can't help but feel like that contributed to a lot of friendships just ending.
Yeah, because you'd never know they saw that and didn't get your side of the story, or
right.
she's just going to people like in messages or something and spreading lies.
Right.
You may never know. I know that's sad because those were your friends, but you know, if it's supposed to work out between friends, it will eventually. And if not, you know, that's okay too.
That's true. And I try not to fault them for it one way or the other. Like, I don't hate that they don't talk to me anymore because, you know, friends drift as time goes on anyway.
Yeah.
It's just, I can't help but feel like I was robbed of at least a few more years of us being friends. And a similar thing happened with me and her family, my ex's family, where it used to be that I could just kind of stop by whenever I had some time off, whenever her sister was off of work and had picked up her niece from school. Like, hi, how's everybody doing? Glad to see you. Sorry, can't stay. I'm off to game night with my friends or whatever. And then one day, it was after like my ex and I had like cut off communication for good, I get a message saying that if I come by the house again, they're going to call the police. And I'm like, but I just saw you guys last week and everything was fine. Again, it's not something I can prove. It's just what I think happened is that she lied about what I was doing to her, or my reasons for going to see them, even though we were quote unquote broken up.
Yeah.
They took it at face value.
Yeah, and the unfortunate thing is, from especially what I've learned in my own experiences, are the parent is going to believe their child no matter what.
Right.
In most cases.
Right.
And there's just nothing you can do to change their mind.
Right. That's another thing. Like, I'm not mad at them. I don't blame them either. Because for me, family is everything. So I would honestly be concerned if they had picked me over their sister, you know, their aunt for the youngsters. Again, like, it breaks my heart a little bit. Number one, that we're just not friends anymore. But also that, again, like, I understand you can't risk it in this world. But a part of me is like, we've known each other 10 years. And to think that you would think the worst of me like this, it breaks my heart a little bit. Especially because, like, I wouldn't want to drag it out into like a he said, she said kind of thing. Like, I'm glad that I just completely cut them out of my life, because I wouldn't want to cause drama. I guess that's one way to put it. Right. But a part of me does wish that I could have just stayed friends with everybody, even if we weren't going to actually be family, that we could still be friends.
Yeah, it's totally understandable because, you know, you had a bond with them and their kids, and that's it's not easy.
It really isn't. One of the last things my ex and I talked about was about how I was really only with her, not out of a sense of obligation anymore, but more because I liked spending time with her family more than I did with her. And I think that's why I shouldn't have said that. I think if I hadn't, she might not have gone to the lengths she did. I think she just wanted to take that away from me too when she ended things. Because the reason we ended things semi-permanently, even though she would still message me on Facebook afterwards in 2019, is that she was moving out of state and I'd never have to see her again. I remember her telling me that she was moving away and it was like somewhere up north, I forget where, which is kind of nice that I can't even remember things that she told me. It feels like it's me finally beginning to move on, to get out from under her influence. Talking about all this, part of it is that I ramble. I do. I acknowledge that. That's a problem that I have. But also, I didn't realize just how much I was actually going through, how much I was putting up with, until I started actually talking to somebody about this. Because I kind of gave a spark notes kind of presentation, I suppose, to a friend of mine about some of the abusive behavior I went through in my relationship. And my friend thought that I had three different girlfriends who just were all abusive and I had terrible tastes in women.
Oh, wow.
And I was very confused. And I told her, like, no, it's all one girl. The way she went, what? Like, she was completely floored at the idea that one person was putting so much abuse into my life. And now that I'm talking about, I realized just how much it actually was.
And yeah, and you have to think, 10 years, every day is something else for 10 years. That's a lot.
Mm-hmm. You get used to it at some point where you kind of, you can, or at least me, I don't know that it's everybody, but I feel like it's enough people that it should be brought attention to. You get used to the abuse where it becomes so secondary, so a part of your life that you don't even acknowledge it anymore.
Yeah. Did you kind of find yourself feeling numb to it?
That's a good way to put it. Yeah, I would say I was completely desensitized. It got to the point where if she didn't do some kind of abusive thing to me, that it felt like, I guess, well, the best way I can equate it is to a dark version of how we used to be, where I would text her first thing in the morning saying, like, morning, beautiful, or tell her I love you. If I didn't, or if she didn't send a message, I felt like the day was wasted. And then suddenly, instead of the sweet little messages, it became the abuse, where if she didn't do something to hurt me, she wasn't showing me any kind of affection anymore. It just became so perverted in my mind, and I didn't even realize it at the time.
No, because it slowly conditions you.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's what's scary, is that even if you're aware of it going in, it's really hard to not fall into that. At the same time, it's like trying to be on constant vigilance, on the lookout for that kind of thing, is also draining, where any like hello or pleasantry or, you know, anything, you're worried, like, is this a trap?
Yeah. And I find myself sometimes meeting people thinking, do they have some kind of underlying motive that I don't know about? You know,
right.
Are they what they seem to be? Or
It'll
mess you up and it sucks. And one of the things that really upset me in our messages is at one point she was telling you to hurt yourself.
Mm.
Was this early on in the relationship?
I would say it probably started about the second half, not too early into the relationship. I want to say it started in the second half, where suddenly, instead of her threatening to hurt herself in whatever manner, I had to hurt myself to prove that I loved her, essentially, is what happened. I remember this because it was one of the days, and she admitted to this, it was one of the days where she had cheated on me, but it was before she told me that she was cheating. And I guess she was feeling ashamed of herself for what she did. But instead of taking responsibility for it, instead of owning up to her mistake this time, it was my fault that she had done it. And we're on the phone and she's telling me that I need to cut myself. I remember this hurting a lot emotionally, because we used to talk until early in the morning. You'd just be on the phone all night, and it would be me talking to her about how she shouldn't hurt herself, that she's in a bad spot mentally, but that doesn't mean she's a bad person, and that she should take care of herself and she should love herself, that I love her. Even if she doesn't feel like she deserves it, the fact that I still love her should be, at least for now, enough to keep her from hurting herself. And then to have that get thrown back in my face in such a dark way, where she's telling me on the phone that I need to kill myself, like I need to grab a knife and I need to cut myself, and she needs to hear me die over the phone.
That's
so that
so evil that is
so, so that
evil.
She so that I can prove that I love her. I remember that night really vividly, and part of it's because this whole relationship left me with PTSD. So it all came back to me a few months ago, where there was a customer at my store that looked just like my ex, down to the way she was dressed, the way she had her hair, the glasses were the same. And I panicked and I ran into the restroom in the back room, and I'm crying into the sink because I couldn't handle it. And suddenly, obviously, I wasn't actually seeing the bedroom that I was in, but it feels like I'm in the bedroom where she's telling me that I've got to cut myself. What she wanted me to do was stab myself in the artery in the leg. with a knife. And it causes me a lot of shame to look back on that, because there's such a stigma on really everything that we're talking about, but also just mental health. So no one would ever really suspect that she was encouraging me to do it. They would just say, oh, well, he was always depressed and talked about killing himself anyway, so I guess he finally went through with it. I couldn't bring myself to do it. Like, I tried. I did genuinely try. But the mental blocks that keep you from doing something like that are, like, really difficult to get through.
I'm glad you did not.
I am too. Thank you. I'm glad it didn't work. And I remember crying, saying how sorry I am that I couldn't kill myself. But that I still love her, and I'm sorry that I couldn't prove it. And she just hangs up on me. And I'm sitting on the bed crying, thinking that I'm a failure as a person, as a boyfriend. It never felt like she genuinely apologized for that night. Like, she said she was sorry, and that she only said it out of anger, and that I should stop holding it over her and guilt tripping her with it.
That's a huge thing to just kind of let go.
Yeah, and she never really accepted her role in the whole thing.
Yeah.
And like I said earlier, in regards to, like, me wanting to know things, wanting answers, anytime I would ask her, like, why would you do that to me after everything I have done for you, all the good that I did for you? And she would always yell at me saying, why do you keep bringing this up? Why do you keep reminding me? I don't want to remember this. I hate myself for everything. Why do you keep making relive it? And I'm like, because I'm living it right now. She would never accept that her past actions were affecting me in the present.
Right.
Like, we couldn't just forget about it because I was living with it. And if she wanted to be with me, she was living with it too, and she didn't want to.
Well, it seems as though it was easy for her to kind of just, in her position, it's like she mm-hmm. didn't have to worry about it.
Uh-huh. She had guilt, but she didn't have remorse. I guess, I don't know if there's something wrong with her mentally. Well, I mean, there is. And that's not to say that anyone with mental illness is automatically abusive or
of course not
anything like that. She just happened to be mentally ill and evil.
Right.
Something about me in her eyes, something about me being pathetic in her eyes, brought out emotions that she didn't have the capacity for, and she didn't like feeling. And so the only way to get rid of them was to get rid of me. I think that's where a majority of all her abusive behavior came from, is that surely at some point he will just break up with me, because I'm just so horrible to him and I won't have to take responsibility. It won't be my fault. It'll be his fault for giving up. And it eventually became too much. And that's why we ended up breaking up for good, even if she would still try and worm her way back into my life.
Yeah.
Randomly text me something, or, you know, message me through Facebook saying, like, oh, how's your mom? How's your little sister? How's, you know, whoever? I would think to myself, like, I know that she's setting me up for something, and I know that it's going to be something bad, but I would try and be cordial. I would try and be polite, but every time it would always turn into a fight about how everything was my fault and not her fault. And she didn't want to take any responsibility for her part. Or she would sometimes go in reverse and say, like, I know everything is my fault. I know I did everything wrong. You don't have to remind me. And then she would guilt me into saying, like, no, it's not all your fault. You didn't do everything wrong. It was me too. I was also in the relationship. I was also doing the wrong thing at the wrong time. And I think that's what she wanted to hear. And eventually I said it enough times to where she could trick herself into believing that it was both of us
right.
that were toxic and both of us were abusive.
Absolutely. So since the breakup, have you done any kind of therapy? Have you looked into it? How have you dealt with all of this trauma?
I've thought about it, and I wish I had. I genuinely do. I haven't yet at all, ever. It's been really hard because I would try and keep it from my family. Like I said, I tried to keep the image of her, of my ex, as being a good person in my family's eyes for as long as I could. It turns out the whole time they knew, because of how I wasn't good at hiding it. I was lying to myself, and they could tell. One instance, I forget when the movie came out, so I won't say what year, but I think it's called Lights Out. It's the one where the lady is possessed, or, you know, is haunted by a friend of hers that is like hunting people in the dark.
Yes.
My sibling and our younger sister and our mom, I think, they went to go see it. And when they came home and they're talking to me about it, they said, "Ben, you cannot go see this movie." And I'm like, "Well, why?" And spoilers if you haven't seen it, but the mom, I think she was a mom, kills herself so that it will keep the ghost from coming back and killing her friends and her family. She's doing it to protect her loved ones. Okay. And the fact that my baby sister, I mean, she wasn't a baby at the time, but, you know, she's like 10 years younger than me. And so she's always my baby sister. But that she knew me so well that that would affect me in such a negative way really put into perspective just how badly my ex messed me up and how I was putting myself through hell for nothing. You know, going to therapy is something I want to do. I really do. But there's a certain amount of almost embarrassment, I suppose. Like, it's nothing special to Hispanic or Mexican cultures by any means, but there is a heavy stigma in even just talking about mental illness. There's a lot of, oh, just keep quiet about it. Just kind of power through it. Just ignore it and it'll go away. And if you seek any sort of like help for it, you're seen as weaker or lesser than. And it goes like that for so many people, regardless of background. I would be lying if I said part of why I haven't gone to therapy is not in part due to that. But just, you know, access is also a major thing.
Yeah, I know, you know, in a lot of different cultures, ethnicities, races, I know it's more of a stigma.
Yeah.
And to get, especially men, to go to therapy. I hate so much that that's a thing. And with men in general, you know, even it's and is expensive, and it's a lot of things that stop people from getting help. But hopefully, I do hope for you, it will one day be possible for you. I don't ever want you or anyone else to ever feel embarrassed or ashamed or anything like that, because you're a person just like I'm a person. Gender aside, we're all people. Mm-hmm. All have emotions and feelings, and we all need to take care of ourselves mentally. And it's just so heartbreaking.
It really is.
Unfortunately, in this country, mental health help is expensive. And even when you have insurance, a lot of places don't take that insurance or they don't pay a lot.
Right.
So it is very difficult to find help.
Even if I can't currently afford it, at least having the options before me would probably go a long way to actually following through.
Yeah. And at least, you know, you could know some kind of price range anyway, and maybe start saving up. What would your advice be to, I don't want to say just men, but I mean, we are on the topic of that. And for men, what would be your advice if a man is going through it right now?
I thought about that a lot because we kind of spoke about that a week ago or so. And I wish I had a more like concrete, a more solid piece of advice. You know, this whole thing is so varied, so different between people where, you know, in my case, I happen to be significantly larger than my significant other. Despite what, you know, we commonly think of, there are times where the man is much smaller than the woman. How often, how rare that is, you know, who knows for sure, but one thing that I would say for sure to at least consider if you're in the situation, number one, you need to be aware of it. Like, I wasn't cognizant of just how abused I was during the relationship. So I would say if you male, female, non-binary, whoever you happen to be, if there's anything that connected with you, like, hey, that sounds like something I was going through. Really step back and look at your relationship and ask yourself, do I love this person? And regardless of what your answer is, ask yourself, does this person love me? And answer that as truthfully as possible, because you will convince yourself that they love you when they've done nothing but hurt you.
Because like you said, you start to become conditioned to relating abuse to love.
Yeah, and you really genuinely begin to believe that abuse is a form of love. This is their quote-unquote love language.
Right.
And you've just got to put up with it until you get to the happy times where they treat you the way you feel that you deserve to be treated. That goes for anybody, regardless of who you happen to be, male, female, non-binary. I know for a fact that women who are in abusive relationships will have someone, I want to say like it's everybody, but you know, when it does happen, when someone comes up and say, hey, this person is abusing you, that they're like, oh, well, they're not always like that. This is just one of their bad days. Sometimes it's easier to just say like, oh, they're just having a bad day, or I made the wrong move. I made a mistake. And you kind of justify their behavior. One thing I would say is you can't take responsibility for what they do. And the more you try and almost be the parent for them in a way, the more you're giving them the ability to get away with these things because they don't have to take responsibility. If you're in the situation, I know a lot of people, they get, a lot of women especially, they get into a position where like, I'm leaving you, I can't handle this anymore, and the gets enraged and attacks them. And I don't want to sound like I'm victim blaming or anything, but my advice would be, don't confront them, don't talk to them about it, just leave. Yeah. And again, I don't want to sound like I'm victim blaming one way or the other. It's just, When your physical safety is, or even just your mental health is at risk, and you're aware of it, and you want to confront them, you want them to admit that they've done wrong, that they've hurt you, it's more important that you take care of yourself. You can't fix people like this.
Even if you do try to confront them or even softly try to have a conversation, that's going to anger them,
right?
And they'll never take accountability. They'll never admit that they've done anything wrong. So really arguing or trying to even have a conversation with abusive people like that, it's only either going to get worse, or you're just going to end up justifying it or blowing it off.
Yeah.
And it's just not worth it.
It's not worth your physical, mental well-being. It's not worth your life. Again, I don't want to sound like I'm victim blaming, because never would I think that. I worry that's how it sounds, but
not at all.
It really, for me, it really is just leave, ghost them, I guess, I think is the term. Just get out and don't look back and do everything you can. And I know that there are circumstances where it would be almost impossible. If you're like what almost happened to me, where she wanted us to move to Ohio, where I would have no family, no friends. And if we had actually gone through with that, I would have been stuck with her because I wouldn't be able to get away from her. You know, there are people in situations like that where they feel like they have nothing, they have nowhere to go, and it might actually be true. And I wish I had advice for that. The truth is, like you kind of touched on earlier, this country is so messed up in certain ways in regards to this, where like a women's shelter may not be easily accessible if you're in that situation and you're trying to run away. I hate there's no easy solution. There's no one size fits all piece of advice that I could give. Not everybody's like me. As much as my family and I struggled with our respective mental illnesses, when I needed them to help me, to give me a place to live, to give me a place I could call home after all of this, like, I'm really lucky.
Yeah.
And I'm very grateful to my family. That's one thing that I think it's kind of lost in everything. As bad as everything got for me, I still had a family that I could fall back on. And I'm very lucky in that regard. I'm very blessed.
And I'm very, very glad that you have that and mm-hmm. that you had that at the time, especially. I mean, I just can't imagine, you know, if you didn't. So I'm very grateful, you know, that you did and that you're here, you know.
Thank you. I'm glad you're here too.
Thank you. You are just so special and I just love you to death. Like I said, I feel like, I don't know, like a kinship there. And I just want you to be okay. So if there's anything that I can ever do, please let me know. Mm-hmm. And I just want to thank you so much for spending your last few hours with me and talking about this, because I know it can't be easy. And thank you.
You're welcome. I'm glad to do it. Like I was afraid going in because it's been so long since I've talked to really anybody for any length of time, other than in passing, like at work. And as much as I want to do a podcast of my own, I feel like I'm one of those guys, or you know, I'm one of those people who's like, oh, I've got a face for radio and a voice for writing books.
Oh, stop. No, you can do anything you want to do. And I highly encourage you to do whatever is in your heart to do. Be mm-hmm. happy.
I'm working on it. Like, I'm trying to exercise. I'm trying to eat better, like make myself feel better.
That's so awesome.
And
I'm so proud of you.
I'm doing better. I'm still like 250, but I don't look the same way that I used to. I think I've just packed on enough muscle that I'm offsetting how much weight I've lost through fat. Not that there's anything wrong with being fat. It's just I wanted to exercise and I wanted to put on muscle, and the loss of fat is kind of, it's just a byproduct of it. I'm not trying to do this in a fat shaming kind of way, not even to like my past stuff. I, as messed up as my life was, as messed up as it could have been, thankfully it wasn't. Deep down, I do genuinely love myself. And that's why I want to do these things. I want to feel. Yeah.
You want to take care of yourself physically mm-hmm. too. And there's nothing wrong with that at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so glad to hear you say you love yourself. I don't hear that enough from people. And I love that you said that.
I've never really said that out loud before, because if I'm being honest, my first thought when I wake up is usually something like, I hate my life. Mm-hmm. And the last thought before I go to sleep is like, oh man, I really hate myself. It's one of those things where you just got so used to being in such a dark place. That's all you really know. It's just habit, and it's really hard to break out of it. It really does start with every time you have that thought, you know, something negative about yourself, is to immediately counter it with something positive, like however small it is. If you got out of bed even 30 minutes sooner than you did the day before while you're in a depressive funk, even if you were in bed for 4 or 5 hours, but you got out of bed 30 minutes earlier than you did the day before, that's something to be proud of. That is progress. And even if you fall back into it and you can't get out of bed the next day just because you don't feel like you have the energy or you don't have something to get out of bed for, that's nothing to be ashamed of. I wish I could follow my own advice, because you know, I fall into that trap too. Yeah. But I always say that other people are better than they think they are. And in the back of my mind, I think that I'm worse than I am. But the truth is that you are better than you think you are. It's just that some people don't want to be, and you can't make that choice for them.
That is so true. Oh, man. You've just given so much great advice.
I hope so.
You have, and I'm just so grateful, and know in my heart this is going to help a lot of people.
I hope so. And I don't want to act like I'm some sort of expert or mansplaining or anything like that. I'm making this up really as I go along with my life. This is stuff that I've lived with for a long time, and I should have come forward about it a long time ago. And I'm glad I'm doing it now, because it's better late than never. And thank you again for giving me this chance.
Absolutely. And hey, if you want to come back on sometime and even talk about a crime case with me, we can totally do that.
that would be kind of fun.
Or a conspiracy theory or anything. We could.
Okay. It would be good practice. Like, it's been a long time since I did my YouTube channel. So I'm surprised that I was able to talk nearly as eloquently as I did. Not that I was all that eloquent, mind you.
You are. Yes, you are.
I'm very out of practice and I'm very self-conscious about me because I spent so much of my life with people thinking that I'm dumb because of how hard it is for me to convey my thoughts to people. But also there was a lot of racism involved. You know, people look at my dark skin and just kind of assume that at best that I don't speak English or at worst that I'm just, it makes me dumb. It's a sad fact of life that
it's ignorance and yeah, it's stupidity.
There's so much of it out there.
It's so disgusting.
Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of good in the world too. And
there is. And I think it's just that the bad just sticks out so much.
It really does.
You know, and it's hard to look past it.
Because the truth is, like, all these negative encounters I've had with women where, by all accounts, I'm surprised I wasn't an incel at any point. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can see that.
Like I could, yeah, I could have seen me becoming one because of any of these things. And instead I'm like, I'm sympathetic, but I'm also empathetic. I understand that not everybody is going to treat me like this. And even if they were, that's no reason for me to treat other people like this.
And, you know, it's still so fresh, too. Mm-hmm. So after a while, I do believe and hope that you'll be able to get back out there and feel just a little bit better each month or so, just to put yourself out there just a little bit more.
Uh-huh.
And I know how difficult that is, and it's way easier for me to say it than, you know, mm-hmm. to do that. But, you know, you have to give yourself time
mm-hmm.
to, you know, process all of this that has happened and to truly start a healing process of mm-hmm. some kind. And I think you need to take care of yourself first.
Yeah.
And then the rest will fall into place.
I think that's true. If I had one more piece of advice in regards to, like, if you were in a abusive relationship like I was, and you're thinking about getting back out there, but you want to, like, work on your mental health or anything like that before you get, quote unquote, good enough to date again, I would definitely take a step back and reconsider that mentality. Because just because you're struggling with your mental health doesn't mean that you aren't worthy of affection, that you're not worthy of love. That's I went true. Through so many years where I thought to myself that I was this fat, lazy slob who deserved every bad thing that happened to him because for some stupid made-up reason that I convinced myself I was guilty of. And the truth is, none of that was true. These were bad things that happened to me. Bad things can happen to good people. That's something that is just the reality. But good things can happen to you too. And one doesn't really negate the other. And you shouldn't focus only on the positive because, you know, the toxic positivity is a thing where you try and, like, you force yourself to be happy and you don't let yourself feel these emotions. You don't let them get out.
Exactly. All emotions are totally normal. There's nobody in the world that is happy 24/7. That's just
right.
It doesn't exist. It's not realistic.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's definitely, like you said, that toxic positivity.
Mm-hmm. Let yourself feel these things. Let yourself ugly cry for however long you need. Sometimes it's cathartic. It's therapeutic. I know that I'm due for one, certainly, where, you know, some little thing is going to just, like, be the final straw. And I'm just going to, like, bawl my eyes out for what would be, like, no reason. Maybe it'll just be I'll see a flower that got trampled on the ground somewhere for whatever reason on that day. It'll make me cry.
It's little things like that mm-hmm. when you never expect it. It'll be the smallest thing you can mm-hmm. look at or think of. And then it just, you know, it's like, okay, I'm going to go lay in my bed and cry for a few okay. hours mm-hmm. and then take a nap.
Yeah. Or sometimes it'll be like happy tears. So I work in retail. Like whenever I'm helping a customer find something out on the sales floor, when they're really kind, they're so polite, they're so like, thank you for helping me find this. And I'm just like, oh no, it's no problem. You're welcome. And then I'm just beaming. I'm just smiling Aww. The rest of the day because They were just so nice.
Yeah.
And I wish I remembered them more often than I do the one negative customer I get like a month. I'm trying to like train myself to get out of that mentality where I focus so much on the negativity and I'm grateful for the positive things in life, however small.
Yeah, that's awesome. And plus you're helping people, you know, and that's awesome. I think more than not, a lot of people really do appreciate, you know, people that just do point them in the right direction, even just, you know, like that. And it'll make somebody's day when there's a nice person that works somewhere that helps them out. You might have made that person's day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I try and do something nice every chance I get. I don't know how much it affects people, but even if it doesn't make me feel like actually better, it is still nice knowing that when I had the chance to be cruel or kind, I chose to be kind.
Benjamin, thank you so much.
You're welcome, and thank you.
I know our time's going to run out again, and I don't want it to shut down before I get to tell you that. I just thank you so much again for coming on, and I appreciate it. And we will definitely stay in touch.
Okay, good. I'm glad.
You have a new sister now, so
I appreciate that.
You know.
Thank you so much. Thank
you, Ben, and I will talk to you on Twitter.
All right. I will be around for sure. Thank you again for the opportunity. I never would have thought that I would ever speak this out loud, let alone talk to someone about it or put it out there for other people to listen to. And if it helps anybody realize their situation, that it's not as bad as it seems, that you can get out of it, that you can get help, then I'm not going to say I'm grateful for what I went through, but I'm grateful that it could help anybody get out of what I went through if they're in danger. I don't want to like make myself out like I'm a martyr or something.
No, we're all humans who have been through things, and through sharing our experiences, we could always in some way help someone else. And
That's
the goal.
Mm-hmm. That's very true. But thank you.
All right.
Have a good one.
You too.
Goodbye.
Bye. Thank you all so much for listening to Ben's story. He is on the road to healing, and it is not an easy journey, but I know he can do this. I want to thank Ben again for sitting down with me and opening up to all of us, letting us know that other men are not alone and it's okay to talk about it when you're ready. With all of our support and love, combined with his strength and desire to move forward, I know he can, and he knows it will take some time. He has expressed how grateful he is for the kind messages and comments that he has so far received. Again, thank you for listening, and I hope if anything in his story resonates with you, that you are able to leave safely. As he said, sadly, there is no one-size-fits-all advice to give, since all abusive relationships are different. Some more dangerous to get out of than others. I'll have resources in the show notes for anyone who may need them. Until next time, stay safe and take care of yourselves.